The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Doris Hyde for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Vision News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from phonearena.com why you need to update to iOS 16 ASAP. From wired.com, one flaw broke every layer of macOS security. From IFL Science, gene therapy restores cone receptors for the colorblind. From blog.thediabetessite.greaterdude.com, 100-year-old vaccine helps type 1 diabetes. Let's get started. Why you need to update your iPhone and iPad ASAP, by Alan Friedman, posted August 19th on phonearena.com. Apple revealed serious vulnerabilities that could affect its devices such as iPhone, iPad, the iPod, and the Mac. Apple said that a pair of security flaws that were discovered could lead a hacker to grab full admin access to affected devices. Rachel Tobach, TOBAC, CEO of Social Proof Security, said that if exploited, the vulnerabilities would allow attackers to impersonate device owners and run any software that is in their names. Security experts say that those with the iPhone 6S and newer should immediately update to iOS 15.6.1 and iPadOS 15.6.1. Models of the iPad that are affected include the 5th-gen iPad and later, all iPad Pro models, and the iPad Air 2. The 7th-generation iPod Touch is also at risk of an attack, as are Macs running macOS Monterey. Apple has been keeping mum on who alerted it to the vulnerabilities and instead has given credit to an anonymous researcher. Just stay tuned. The vulnerabilities were discovered in WebKit, the browser engine that Apple uses for Safari, and the kernels of iOS, iPadOS, and macOS. A kernel is the core of an operating system and has control over the entire system. It also helps interactions between hardware and software. In a support page release, Apple said that exploiting the WebKit flaw would require a vulnerable device to process maliciously crafted web content that may lead to arbitrary code execution. The second bug allows a malicious app to execute arbitrary code with kernel privileges, giving attackers the ability to access all parts of a device. Note that Apple points out in the update it sent out for iOS and iPadOS that it provides important security updates and is recommended for all users. Considering the vulnerabilities that it is trying to patch here, we concur with Apple. Update your compatible devices now. To install iOS 15.6.1 or iPadOS 15.6.1 on your iPhone, iPad, or iPod Touch 7th generation, go to Settings, General, Software, Update. From Wired.com, a single flaw broke every layer of security in macOS. An injection flaw allowed a researcher to access all files on a Mac. Apple issued a fix, but some machines may still be vulnerable, by Matt Burgess, posted August 12th. Every time you shut down your Mac, a pop-up appears. Are you sure you want to shut down your computer now? Nestled under the prompt is another option most of us likely overlook, the choice to reopen the apps and windows you have open now when your machine is turned back on. Researchers have now found a way to exploit a vulnerability in this saved state feature, and it can be used to break the key layers of Apple's security protections. The vulnerability, which is susceptible to a process injection attack to break macOS security, could allow an attacker to read every file on a Mac or take control of the webcam, says Thijs Alkemade, Thijs Alkemade, a security researcher at Netherlands-based cybersecurity firm Computest, who found the flaw. It's basically one vulnerability that could be applied to 3 different locations, he says. After deploying the initial attack against the saved state feature, Alkemade was able to move through the other parts of the Apple ecosystem, first escaping the macOS sandbox, which is designed to limit successful apps to one app, and then bypassing the system integrity protection, SIP, a key defense designed to stop authorized code from accessing sensitive files on a Mac. Alkemade, who is presenting the work at the Black Hat Conference in Las Vegas, first found the vulnerability in December 2020. and reported the issue to Apple through its bug bounty scheme. He was paid a pretty nice reward for the research, he says, although he refuses to detail how much. Since then, Apple has issued two updates to fix the flaw, first in April 2021 and again in October 2021. When asked about the flaw, Apple said it did not have any comment prior to Alcamada's presentation. The company's two public updates about the vulnerability are light on detail, but they say the issues could allow malicious apps to leak sensitive user information and escalate privileges for an attacker to move through a system. Apple's changes can also be seen in Xcode, the company's development workspace for app creators, a blog post describing the attack from Alcamada says. The researcher says that while Apple fixed the issue for Macs running the Monterey operating system, which was released in October 2020, the previous versions of macOS are still vulnerable to the attack. There are multiple steps to successfully launching the attack, but fundamentally, they come back to the initial process injection vulnerability. Process injection attacks allow hackers to inject code into a device and run code in a way that's different from what was originally intended. The attacks are not uncommon. It's quite often possible to find the process injection vulnerability in a specific location, Alcamada says, but to have one that's so universally applicable is a very rare find, he says. The vulnerability Alcamada found is in a serialized object in the saved state system, which saves the apps and windows you have open when you shut down a Mac. This saved state system can also run while a Mac is in use in a process called AppNap. When an application is launched, Alcamada says, it reads some files and tries to load them using an insecure version of the serialized object. In all of Apple's operating systems, these serialized objects are used all over the place, often for inter-process exchange of data, the researcher writes in the blog post describing the attack. The way the attack works is that you can create those files at the place another application will load them from, Alcamada says. Essentially, a malicious serialized object is created and can make the system behave in ways it's not supposed to. From here, Alcamada was able to escape the Mac app sandbox using the vulnerability. This was the first flaw that Apple fixed. By injecting the code into another application, it was possible to extend what the attack could do. Finally, Alcamada was able to bypass the system integrity protection that's supposed to stop unauthorized code from reading or changing sensitive files. I could basically read all of the files on the disk and also modify certain system files, he says. There is no evidence to date that the vulnerability has been exploited in the wild. However, the flaw shows how, in some instances, it may be possible for attackers to move through an entire operating system, increasingly being able to access more data. In the description for his talk, Alcamada says that as local security on macOS moves more toward an iOS model, this highlights that multiple parts of the system need to be re-examined. From IFLScience.com, gene therapy partly restores cone receptors in eyes of children born colorblind. Seeing changes to my vision has been very exciting. Experimental gene therapy has partly restored the function of the retina's cone receptors in two children who were born totally colorblind, according to a new study reported in the journal Brain. Not only have the two patients reported changes to their vision, but brain imaging also showed that the researchers were able to reawaken dormant neural circuits and evoke visual signals that had never been experienced by these young people. The breakthrough comes from two trials testing gene therapies targeting specific genes known to be linked to achromatopsia, a genetic condition also known as total colorblindness. This disease is caused by variants of the genes related to cone cells, one of the two types of photoreceptors within our eye's retina that are responsible for color vision. Along with not being able to perceive any color, people with achromatopsia also experience generally poor vision and find bright light uncomfortable. While previously gene therapies for colorblindness have shown hope, there has been some uncertainty about whether dormant cone signaling pathways in the brain and visual system of people with achromatopsia can be reawakened after years of deprivation. The answer is yes. according to this new study, providing huge hope for this potentially life-changing gene therapy. Our study is the first to directly confirm widespread speculation that gene therapy offered to children and adolescents can successfully activate the dormant cone photoreceptor pathways and evoke visual signals never previously experienced by these patients. Dr. Tessa Decker, D-E-K-K-E-R, lead study author from UCL Institute of Ophthalmology, said in a statement sent to IFL Science. In the new study, UCL researchers used fMRI brain scans to study 4 children who had received the gene therapy, then compared them to 9 untreated patients and 28 volunteers with normal vision. In 2 of the 4 treated children, the imaging showed strong evidence for cone-mediated signals in the brain's visual cortex coming from the treated eye. Prior to the treatment, there was no evidence of cone function, but now the pair showed neural activity that closely resembled those of the normal-sighted people. The team says this feat may only be possible in young people due to the plasticity of their brain and its remarkable ability to adapt. We are demonstrating the potential of leveraging the plasticity of our brains, which may be particularly able to adapt to different treatment effects when people are young, added Dr. Decker. The question now is, has the therapy actually gifted the children with color vision? The researchers asked the 2 patients to complete a psychophysical test of cone function, which showed notable changes in the way the children perceived different levels of contrast. One of the patients commented, "Seeing changes to my vision has been very exciting, so I'm keen to see if there are any more changes and where this treatment as a whole might lead in the future." The researchers are keen to back up their findings with further research, but it's currently looking pretty promising. We are still analyzing the results from our 2 clinical trials to see whether this gene therapy can effectively improve everyday vision for people with achromatopsia, said Dr. Michelle Michaelides, M-I-C-H-A-E-L-I-D-E-S. Boy, is that Greek. Co-lead author from the UCL Institute of Ophthalmology and Moorfields Eye Hospital. We hope that with positive results and with further clinical trial, we could greatly improve the sight of people with inherited retinal diseases. From blog.thediabetessite.greatergood.com. 100-year-old vaccine found to reduce blood sugar in type 1 diabetes by Katie Taylor, K-A-T-I-E-T-A-Y-L-O-R. The BCG vaccine, Bacillus Calmette-Guérin, has been used for over 100 years to protect against tuberculosis and to treat bladder cancer. In 2017, interim results from a Massachusetts General Hospital Phase 1 clinical trial provided hope that the vaccine could restore proper function to the islet cells and stop the root cause of type 1 diabetes. Now the final results of Phase 1 are in, and there is growing excitement in the scientific community. According to Dr. Denise Faustman, director of the Massachusetts General Hospital Immunobiology Lab and lead study author, this is clinical validation of the potential to stably lower blood sugars to near normal levels with a safe vaccine, even in patients with long-standing disease. The study. The 5-year study first found a reduction in HbA1c 3 years after the initial doses of the BCG vaccine. Study participants had been treated with 2 doses of BCG 4 weeks apart, and all 52 participants had type 1 diabetes for at least 2 years prior to the study. After 4 years, participants' HbA1c levels had decreased an average of 15 to 18%. 5 years after initial dose, the average HbA1c level of participants was 6.1%, which is below the normal 6.5% threshold for a diabetes diagnosis. How does it work? The BCG vaccine increases production of a cytokine, a type of protein, called TNF, tumor necrosis factor. This is important because TNF may help fight autoimmune disease, both by fighting the T cells that destroy pancreatic islet cells and restoring the T cells, called TREGs, that stop the immune system from attacking the body's insulin-producing islet cells. Researchers wanted to know, besides fighting damaging T cells and restoring good ones, how the BCG vaccine had a positive effect on blood sugar. They found that the body's glucose metabolism changed in response to BCG. Participants underwent a shift from oxidative phosphorylation, the body's most common means of energy production, to aerobic glycolysis, the type of energy production that happens during steady-state aerobic exercise. Aerobic glycolysis requires the cells to consume more glucose, which means the vaccine also has potential as a treatment for type 2 diabetes. What next? Several phase 2 trials are underway. Large groups of adult participants with type 1 diabetes will receive multiple doses of the BCG vaccine, and a BCG pediatric trial is being scheduled as well. Dr. Mahai G. Netia, NETEA, of Radboud University's Medical Center in the Netherlands, has high hopes for the results of the study. The MGH trials and other larger prevention and intervention trials underway around the globe may lead to a major shift in the prevention and treatment of infections and autoimmunity, Netia said. BCG is also being investigated as a potential treatment for multiple sclerosis. The phase 2 trial is set to be finished in 2023, which seems painfully far off. But if the trials are successful, a commonplace vaccine could make a world of difference for people with diabetes around the world. Those interested in the phase 2 clinical trials still enrolling can get more information at the hot link. Stay hopeful, friends. From OphthalmologyTimes.com, cortical cerebral visual impairment, getting to the heart of pediatric vision loss and blindness, reviewed by Lofty Marabet, OD, PhD, MPH, and Jesse Cronin. Cortical cerebral visual impairment, CVI, a condition related to brain injury, is a visual impairment resulting from damage to the visual pathways in the brain. Unfortunately, CVI is all too common, although it is not as commonly diagnosed, and therein lies the problem. CVI is the number one cause of pediatric visual impairment and blindness in the U.S. and developed countries worldwide, according to Lofty Marabet, OD, PhD, MPH, and Associate Professor of Ophthalmology at Harvard Medical School, and Director of the Laboratory for Visual Neuroplasticity at Schepens Eye Research Institute. That's S-C-H-E-P-E-N-S, and Massachusetts Eye and Ear in Boston. Marabet is also on the Board of Directors, Education Committee, and CVI Steering Committees of the Perkins School for the Blind in Watertown, Massachusetts. There has been a fundamental shift in the clinical profile of visual impairment in pediatric populations, and the Perkins population mirrors this perfectly, he commented. From the 1950s to 1980s, children enrolled in the school were typically profoundly blind due to a disease or pathology at the ocular level, i.e., infection, inherited disease, or retinopathy of prematurity. Over the past couple decades, a shift occurred, with children presenting with a more complex profile. They were visually impaired and often had learning disabilities and motor or language issues. The source of those issues was not in the eye, but from brain damage, he explained. This difference in pediatric blindness is important both from clinical and scientific standpoints, as well as an educational standpoint, Marabet emphasized. Recognition of the source of the brain-based visual disabilities is the key to the early intervention in affected children. In light of that, Marabet and other researchers are attempting to determine the inherent differences in these children, specifically how visual impairment caused by damage to the brain is different from visual impairment at the level of the eye. Current understanding of CVI. What has been determined is that affected children may have sustained a neurologic complication or brain injury during the time of development, i.e., around the time of birth or shortly thereafter. Some children may have had a stroke in utero or were born prematurely. Other causes include seizure disorder, trauma, and genetic or metabolic disorders. Because of medical advances in neonatal care, many more of those children are surviving today than in the mid-20th century. In addition, today there is a greater recognition of their perceptual and learning issues at the research level, and that focus is extending that recognition into the clinics. In a typical scenario, parents may report that their child cannot locate a favorite toy or cross the street or becomes overwhelmed in crowds or a busy classroom. In contrast, the child's vision may only be moderately impaired or even normal based on a Snellen chart evaluation or visual perimetry, and the eyes appear healthy on slit lamp evaluation. This scenario often can lead the parents into the weeds, with suggestions of possible diagnoses including autism, developmental delays, or psychiatric issues, when the clinician does not recognize that the visual impairment is not based in the eye, but is localized to the brain. This is the point at which these children begin to fall through the cracks. CVI study. Marabet and colleagues, in collaboration with Boston Children's Hospital, Perkins School for the Blind, and Boston University Medical Center, are currently studying the brain scans of children with CVI to correlate any identified structural changes in the brain to the manifesting developmental and behavioral deficits, and comparing the scans to those obtained from children with normal vision and those with other forms of ocular blindness. In their study, children are divided based on age, 7 years and older, and 14 years and older. For the younger group, virtual reality and eye tracking are used to obtain an idea of their visual perceptual abilities by assessing functional vision. In this group, the children are tasked with, for example, finding a certain toy in the toy box, or a particular person in a crowded hallway, and the complexity of the environment and the child's reaction to it is assessed. As the environment increases in complexity, despite good visual acuity, their vision becomes a very confusing swirl of colors that prevents the differentiation of objects and persons. Marabet uses virtual reality to create functional vision assessment tools that surpass the standard eye chart and tests performed in an ophthalmology or optometry clinic. We found that the children are very sensitive to clutter, crowding, complex motion, and more interestingly, to visual demands. As the task becomes much more difficult, that is, as we make the assessment harder, their visual system breaks down, he explained. This point is important because although visual assessment during a standard vision test indicates that these children may have normal visual acuity, when put into a situation in which the visual system is taxed, the system can break down and the hidden visual impairment manifests itself. This breaking down of the visual system in the setting of high visual demands and complexity is the telltale sign of CVI and highlights the difference between visual function and functional vision. We need to gain a better understanding of how these children use their vision in the real world, he said. The children who are 14 years and older undergo MRIs of the brain to see how their brains are wired, i.e., white matter connectivity, and activate as a function of performing virtual reality tasks. We found that their brains are very different from children with typical neurologic development and from those who are blind from other causes, emphasizing the need for education, he said. Another factor under investigation is why some children benefit from intervention and others do not, and the timeline of improvement. Part of the challenge here is determining how the cause of the CVI, brain injury, trauma, infection, seizure, or a genetic or metabolic disorder, relates to underlying visual impairment. This makes for a complicated patient profile, and every child is unique in terms of their challenges, he pointed out. Intervention and beyond. No specific treatment currently exists for CVI. Early diagnosis of brain-based visual impairment and implementation of strategies to promote maximal brain development are the current focus, but there is no strong evidence yet to support what does and does not benefit these patients. This is a great challenge because much more vision can be involved. It is important to use a multi-level approach that does not just consider vision, but also language and increasing cognitive function and self-awareness in general. The goal is to promote as much brain development as possible, he advised. In his lab, the researchers attempt to develop novel assessment tools and compensatory strategies to better understand the difficulties that the children face and to work around their challenges. Perkins CVI Protocol. Perkins has created the CVI Center at Perkins to bring researchers, educators, medical professionals, and parents together to make a concerted effort to recognize the brain impairment in these children as quickly as possible and ensure they have access to the effective interventions they need while driving groundbreaking research in the field. At Perkins, the resources are being focused on how to assess and educate children with CVI and how this disorder is fundamentally different from children with eye-based visual mental impairment. 52% of the Perkins population has CVI. Jesse Cronin, senior director of Perkins CVI Now, described a new, ambitious two-part effort spearheaded by Perkins, the first phase of which will be released in May 2022. The protocol is a groundbreaking digital assessment tool that was created out of a series of symposia with leaders in CVI who were convened beginning in 2018, she said. The collaborations among the experts highlighted the huge gap that exists around CVI knowledge and diagnosis, and that it is a problem approaching epidemic proportions that is largely unknown, even by experts in visual impairment. Cronin explained that the challenge identified is twofold, providing both education about CVI and functional baseline assessments and diagnostic tools for families, teachers, and physicians. This recognition generated the Perkins CVI protocol, which fills the education gap and provides a database of information to support educators and physicians in the U.S. and worldwide. The teaching and diagnostic assessment tool that was created has enough embedded educational resources for educators to learn about the disorder and is easily accessible and sufficiently well-structured to be reliably valid and useful for those with all levels of understanding about CVI, Cronin explained. This tool is designed to provide more of a whole child diagnostic assessment of CVI than previously available, and to identify children who may not have been previously diagnosed. Part 1 is an anonymous data medical file review that compiles all the basic information about each patient and facilitates amassment of demographic information in the database that can be shared with researchers. From this database, a lengthy list of questions was compiled to be used with parents that looks at 16 visual behaviors, the result of which is a functional visual assessment, customized student sketch of the individual's visual behaviors, what the experienced behaviors may mean, and recommendations for that patient. The tool includes links to videos and articles about the visual behaviors and scientific reports, tutorials, and lists of online learning courses. This part also generates a letter to be sent to patients' eye care providers to include them in the assessment of possible CVI to access care. Part 2 is an education roadmap that is currently under development and validation and is expected to be rolled out in early 2023. It will incorporate everything from Part 1 and create a series of recommendations for observations and direct assessments that will generate an in-depth report and provide a set of educational recommendations. This report will inform independent educational plans, which are core to special education, Cronin said. A conference on CVI was scheduled for June 26 through 28, 2022 in Boston, Massachusetts. The goal is to identify and diagnose these children earlier and follow them closely to obtain the best benefit, Marabet said. Identifying them when they are in their teens may mean that valuable time has been lost, although it is never too late. There is a list of authors for the research with the references for their published work on the subjects. Posted August 13th to the National Organization of Parents of Blind Children, Envision. Looking for a fulfilling career? We are hiring for a community programs coordinator. This position would coordinate the development, planning, and implementation of support groups, programs, and activities for individuals of all ages with vision impairment. For more information or to apply, please head to envisionus.com/job-opportunities. The flyer says now hiring, community programs coordinator, location, Wichita, Main Street. Job description, coordinate the development, planning, and implementation of support groups. And there you can view the full post on at visionus.com/job-opportunities. I ran out of time for this week's Vision News. Be sure to listen next week. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Doris Hyde, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Vision News is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have comments or questions, call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you.